Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm going to give you another way to try and discover who you really are. If you've been listening to the show, you know that's what the show is about. You know that I believe that we're all demonstrating cover stories. Just like secret agents, we're presenting a picture of ourselves which is not the whole picture. Because we learned that we needed to be this person, whoever it is we're pretending to be. And not only are we pretending for the world, but we're pretending for ourselves. And undercover, we're keeping aspects of ourselves secret, not only from the world, but from ourselves. And so this show is about helping to discover that. And, as I said, today I'm going to offer you another way to look at that. And then I'm going to play an interview with the exuberant, passionate, powerful Tomei Cousins, who came to Sarasota, Florida, to help the Oslo Repertory Theater Company and the Sarasota Ballet Company put on a version of Contact, the musical which is celebrating its 10th anniversary, the anniversary of its having won the Tony for the best musical of that year. So, hang on. Here comes the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh, I really can. Oh, I really can. Turn down all
welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about becoming who you really are. That is, not pretending, as all of us really are, I think, that the way you present yourself and the things you think about yourself are all there is to you. There's much, much more. The chances are good that how you present yourself and even what you say to yourself about yourself are a cover story that you created in childhood, and that there are qualities, abilities, skills, capacities, ideas, memories that you have hidden undercover. And it may be that you need some of those things. In any case, trying to keep the lid on those things takes energy, and we all need more energy. So this show is all about recognizing that you may not be exactly who you really are, and finding out how to find out who that is, and then how to be it. Last week, I gave you an exercise called Who Am I Really? And I hope that some of you did it, and I'm waiting to hear anything that you might want to tell me about what you might have learned. Today, I'm going to tell you another really good source of information about discovering your cover and undercover qualities. That can be found in the stories that you like telling about yourself and the ones that embarrass you. We all censor. We all decide what we can say and what we can't say. So here's an example. Sam, who's a client of mine, always talks about the deals that he's closed, but he never talks about the ones that got away. He believes that it is his successful cover that brings him love and admiration, and that exposure of his I can fail, which of course all of us can, undercover, would take it all away. His wife, Rebecca, on the other hand, jokes about her bad judgment, and she tells stories on how she got this wrong and how she was late and how she, you know, this kind of stuff, but she never mentions the things that she does well, and she is pretty accomplished. She believes that it is her inadequacy cover that makes her lovable, and that if she admitted her competence, she'd be abandoned. So I'm offering you an opportunity to listen to yourself. What are the kinds of stories that you tell about yourself? What are the kinds of things about yourself that you don't tell? What are the things that you think you're trying to present by the stories you tell? And what are those things which you're keeping? And is it possible that in some way you could benefit from those? So in these examples, if Sam didn't have to try so hard to look like he was always competent, probably he wouldn't have some of the physical distress he has. And if Rebecca was able to really enjoy her accomplishments and let everybody know them, probably her life would be sweeter. So okay, that's just some examples. I don't have a lot of time to talk about that today, because today I am playing an interview I did with Tomei Cousins, actor, dancer, singer, performer, and the creative director, or the artistic creative director, of the versions of the musical Contact, which have occurred since the Broadway musical won the Tony 10 years ago. So Contact is celebrating its 10th anniversary, and Tomei came to the Oslo Theater in Sarasota, Florida, where I live, to help the Sarasota Ballet Company and the Oslo Repertory Acting Company come together for the very first collaboration between these two wonderful companies and put on this amazing piece called Contact, which is dance. Just amazing, remarkable dance that tells a wonderful story. It opened last week. It is remarkable, and Tomei is here, well, in voice, because of course I recorded this interview, and you're going to hear his story, the story of how he became himself and how he became the guy, the front guy for Contact. So here, without waiting anymore, is my interview with the exuberant, touching, incredibly forthright. He's right there. There's no guile. There's no pretense. There's no hiding. He is what I am hoping we will all be one day. Just so much himself. So here, himself, Tomei Cousins.
Okay,
I am here in the conference room at the Oslo with Tomei.
Yes.
Who only uses one name.
No, my name's Cousin.
What?
Cousin.
Oh, is that your name, Tomei Cousin?
Tomei Cousin.
Oh, so I'm here with Tomei Cousin.
Yes, right, right.
They never.
They just say Tomei.
That's correct.
Yeah, well, people in the theater do just go, Tomei.
Yeah.
They know me as that, you know.
Yeah.
The
well,
only one.
And I was just going to say, and how many others can there
and
be?
And I'm the only one, right.
And he is here as the, what, designated Susan Stroman.
Well, the title that I've come up with
kind
of is artistic supervisor. It's like artistic directing supervisor of her productions of Contact.
Yes. Yeah, it's great, because the Oslo is doing Contact.
Right.
Okay. Now, let me tell you, I do a series of interviews called Anatomy of an Artist, mm-hmm. and I always ask the same question.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You're a dancer.
Right. I started off as a dancer.
You started off as a dancer.
I started off as a dancer. And then it branched into acting and singing and kind of et cetera. But it started off, movement is the root of it.
Yeah, the base. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how did it happen?
How did I start becoming a dancer? In my household, well, I was born in Germany.
Uh-huh.
And so when I was a young child, my father was in the service. And there was a little bit of difficulty picking up the English and the German, you know.
How old were you when you?
When we came to the United States, 6 years old. I was six.
Oh.
So it was a lot of...
you were already speaking German.
I was speaking German and English because I was born on a military base.
Right.
So it was kind of like a dual thing. But I was having some difficulty negotiating that, you know. And so they were trying to find different ways of helping me learn. So there was the suggestion of music. And so I had music classes, and then through that it was kind of branched into like movement in a way, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, because dancing had counting. You know, so I had this dyslexia thing going on with counting.
Uh-huh.
But at the time, they didn't call it that.
Exactly. I know, I have it too.
Yeah, exactly. So they were just trying to find different ways, and I just kind of took to it, you know, like the movement part of it.
Yeah.
And so I was in, you know, this movement, but no real formal dance training. It was just like movement, rhythmics.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like in that area.
Okay, so let me ask first. Do your parents sing, dance, act,
No.
Okay. No. So this was not in any way an attempt to get you into the business, just to help you
educate you. It had nothing to do with performing arts whatsoever. And then around about like 19, I'm saying I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
There was a camp that I had gone to, and there was a dance program that was there. Jeffrey Holder. So Jeffrey Holder was one of the dance teachers, and I just kind of took to it, you know.
Yeah.
I just kind of took to it.
It was natural.
It was natural, and he gave me like a certificate that I still have, and everything. Like, oh, yes, you know. And it just kind of, you know, stuck, but it didn't register in my mind or my family's mind or anything like that. This could be
a work,
you know, like be a career, you know, anything like that. It just was. It didn't register at all. And then luckily, I ended up in a musical. You know, as kids participate.
In what?
It was a show called
Middle School. You were young.
I was young, 8, 9, 10. It was like with third grade. Like,
My God, you were very young.
Yeah, I was very young. And the show was The Me Nobody Knows. So I ended up in this show. And
okay, wait. How did you end up in this show?
There was a local production of it that was...
Oh, not like in school?
No, this was a local professional production at the Baltimore Center Stage.
Uh-huh.
And my family come from Germany, to Maryland, to Baltimore, so they were doing it there. And they needed an understudy kind of cover thing. And so I just kind of went to this big audition, I guess, you know, and I ended up getting that.
Okay, now hold on. Mm-hmm. You're 8 years old.
You're nine years old, you're ten years old. Yeah.
You didn't say, oh, I think I'll go to this audition and get on the bus.
No. There was just like an open...
And
you know,
somebody
like
open, took
my,
you.
My mother took me to this open thing, and we went in, and I ended up getting the job, and I think it's because of energy, you know, like energy and enthusiasm.
Yeah, you have a lot. I've seen it.
You know, so I think, yeah.
I imagine who you were as a kid.
Yeah, so I think that's what it was, and I was just found something that was fun, you know,
that
was fun to do, and I liked it, and I found that I could sing, you know, because at the time, we're talking like 68, 69, you know, Michael Jackson, so it was very popular to...
To be a young black kid and sing.
Exactly. So it was a bunch, it's all kids in the show,
right,
except there's two adults. So it was, that's how it basically started. And then after that, nothing, no dance class, back to life, nothing at sports and normal kid until I was about senior in high school. I mean, this was really, really late.
Yeah.
And I was going to an all boys Catholic military school.
That must have stood you in good disciplinaries.
That's the background of it.
You know, right. Like, you know how to make yourself work and do what's necessary.
Absolutely.
Right.
And it just so happened that the school had a
college. It just so happened. I love this here.
But it had a college prep program. Uh-huh. So you had to do like career and college guides and choose a school, you know, researcher that you want to go to. And the one, this just happened all at the same time by coincidence. There was a television special that came on. I hung out with my friends, you know, watching them, whatever.
Yeah.
And there was a television special that came on, and it was Ben Vereen, and he was doing this duet, like a jitterbuggy kind of thing, with Debbie Allen. And we were just watching it, you know, and just remember everyone liking it. I remember one of my friends saying, "You could do that."
Wow.
You know, and it literally, like a light bulb. I mean, it was just like a light bulb. And it all just kind of like...
Yeah.
Kind of clicked. And I remember coming home saying to my mother, "I'd like to take a dance class again." You know, it was like, we're talking almost 10 years later.
Right.
You know? And she just said, "Okay,
yeah, we're fine.
You know, and it was from that moment on, I think, that I have not thought like I thought, even though the level of professionality and everything else grew, but the initial, you know, this is it.
Kind That's of, the defining
know,
the, moment.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. And it just, and so everything kind of went in play. I went back to my high school, and they were on the board was the only college I applied to was Point Park College. It was a college then, Point Park College, which is in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a very large dance department. It was the only school I applied to, and of course I got in because I was a boy.
Yes, you know, were.
And this is in 1978, so it was the same year that Baryshnikov defected. It was the same year that John Travolta had done Saturday Night Fever and Grease.
Yeah.
Dance Fever was on television.
Yeah.
It was another big male thing, but it was men were, you know, in musicals.
Were hot,
you know, I mean, so they grabbed...
And not that many of them.
Exactly. So, and they had grabbed any guy, you know, that applied, you know, to this college. So they said, "We'll use your first year as your audition," you know, because I really didn't have any real formal training. I'd never had a ballet class in my life, and we're talking 17, you know, that's really late, to be starting. And all I had was Dunham from years ago with Mr. Holder.
Right.
So that was it. And I went to this school, and I got there, and it was like a rude awakening. You know, it was a very rude awakening, because here are girls, you know, who had been dancing all their lives on point, and, you know, the whole thing. And I just knew right then that I had to play extreme catch-up, you know, like extreme first year. And they treated your freshman year with like you were a child, ironically. They, you know, as if you were a nine-year-old child, even though you were an adult, they taught you as if you were a nine-year-old child.
Well, that's a good thing, because that's what you needed.
Exactly. So I just kind of focused on that and just knew that it was going to be constant.
Work.
So that's all I did. I just worked, and I read, and I went to see everything, and I just became like... immersed in it, you know, like a sponge. Because, and the saving grace, which I found out later from my teachers, is that I came in with all this energy, but I didn't have
any bad habits
to correct, you know, so everything to me was new, you know, where the other kids, they had to kind of like fix and
before they
could get to the raw material.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what happened. So as a result of it, I just kind of...
Well, that and what I hear is that you fell in love.
Yeah.
And in that first flush of love, I mean, all you want is more of it.
Exactly.
Give me more of
it,
you know.
Exactly.
Right.
And I just landed in the right place at the right time with the right teachers, because they all were, they were not older, they had just sort of semi-retired, you know, from before.
They were professionals.
They were professionals. They sort of had just stopped dancing themselves, so they still had that little with them, and they just saw...
Yeah.
This guy, you know, who just wanted, you know, I wore like combat boots to tap class because I didn't know, nobody told me any different. So I took my combat boots from high school and put taps on, you know what I mean? So this is way before the stomp and all that stuff. I can't think of what they call it. The Australian boot dancing show. Top Dog.
Yeah, right.
This was years before that, you know, I just didn't know any better, you know, and so it was a constant growing.
So, so I hear all the delight and wonder and passion of it. Was it difficult for you in any way?
Physically, yes. I'm going to say physically, yes, because my body was geared. I was a star. In high school, I was a star athlete. It's like I ran track. I was a sprinter.
Okay.
So my muscles had developed in a different way.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a whole
don't do that. Do this one.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, turn out.
Yeah, right. Turning, and your muscles are saying, "Are you kidding?"
Yeah, exactly. So it was a ripping, and so I had a lot of injury early.
Wow.
Those first 3 years, it was a lot of like re-ripping muscles and retraining to do different things. think
so. So, again, I want to ask, were they able to help you with that? I mean, did they know what was going on? Or did you just have to suffer through
it? I think I suffered through it. At the time, there wasn't, like, the big knowledge of, like, sports medicine.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You are lucky that you didn't do yourself damage.
Well, I did. I mean, I had a pretty serious injury when I was 21, like, right out of school. I mean, right, you know, because
right.
it just wasn't, like, the yoga wasn't, like, a, right. you know, a big thing back then. So it was a lot of... muscle ripping. I remember that. A lot of injury.
You could have done yourself permanent damage.
Yeah, well, I did. Actually, I did. I mean, to be honest with you, I had a very bad hip injury, hip groin injury, when I was 21, right out of school. Like, I graduated in May of 82,
mm-hmm.
and then, like, the June. Like, right, I was already working professionally, and I had just, I ripped my left adductor, which is, like, the major turnout muscle of a dancer. It's, like, the major muscle. I ripped it. But, and again, back then, you didn't know sports medicine. You should stop and ice and
dancer
knows work. Right. So I kept going, and it hemorrhaged, and it just got really messy. So there was after I even finished school, there was a whole year and a half of me not doing anything. But I had finished school, and it's kind of like the story in Fame, on TV. The dancer graduated this year, and he ends up teaching.
Yeah.
So that's what happened to me. So I had finished school, and they saw I was, you know, talented.
Yeah, right.
And I was not doing anything. I said, well, would you like to teach here while you recuperate? So I taught at the very school I graduated from the prior year, so some of my former classmates were now students of mine, which is the weirdest thing, because we were the same age. You know?
Yeah,
it was really
right.
weird. But I learned through that. No one wanted to take the... this is how I actually got into working in more theater, because I was only dance. It was concert dance, you know, modern dance and jazz and just dance.
Right.
There was no vocal or any... I had no thoughts of being in a musical ever again in my life. And no one wanted to teach the actors.
No.
So they said, well, do you want to take it? I said, sure, I'll do it, because I needed a job.
You know?
I said, sure, I'll do it. And through teaching that first year, I saw how hungry the actors were to move, you know, like to learn how to move, and how if you found the right way into it, like you found the right way, you could really, they could trust you, and they would try it. You know, but if they were intimidated by it, they would pull back, the same as dancers.
I was thinking that, right.
If the right vocal teacher, the right coach can coax it out of them, then,
right.
And that's when I started to like, this is a whole different world, you know, and I was 21, you know, going like, there's something really interesting in here, like that exchange back and forth. So that's the nucleus which led me.
And am I wrong, or did you like the actors?
Oh, I love them.
Yeah,
I love
see,
them.
That's
I love them. Since that day, mm-hmm. I like teaching actors more than I like teaching dancers. I hate teaching dancers. I really do.
Yeah, I
simply
believe
because they there's so much breaking down you have to do, or so much
restructuring, something, right?
And the actors are completely open. They're like, okay.
They're virgin.
You know, show me, exactly. Show me, or I'll try it if I trust you. I'll be sure, you know.
Right.
If you won't laugh, say, no, nobody's going to laugh at you. This is the whole point of it. It's a classroom.
Right.
You know, so that was the turn. I think that was a huge turning point for me, like, when I was really young, and I got it really quickly. And so I felt that at that time, I mean, there was a thing like triple threat, the singer, dancer, actor.
Right.
And I was going, well, okay, if I'm going to deal with these actors, I'm going to overtrain them, because all anybody really expects them to do is go
just,
and sing.
Right. And then move well.
And throw their arms up in the air. And
can you move your ass?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, right.
And then I said, well, what happens in this scenario if they go in and say, if they can do that, maybe let's see if they can do it. If they can do more, then they'll go,
keep
going with the old thing, and you stand a better chance of getting more work. You
know,
I'm going to overtrain them,
right.
You know, and that's what happens.
You're going to give them another skill.
I'm going to give them another skill and treat them as dancers. I'm going to make them appear as dancers. So eventually, if they keep going on that path, they can actually blend in and walk into an audition, and then they'll get cast, go to a dancing call, and get cast, you know, get called back. And then when they sing, they go, oh, wait a minute, you know what I mean? Like, you know, because, you know, it should be that way. And the reverse for dancers. I would say go to an acting class. You know, go to the acting class. Take the vocal class. So when you go in and you blow them away with your dancing, then you sing, they go, that world is where I
And so that's what you did.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, I worked before. I actually was working before in musicals again before I started training
as
again.
A singer and an
as
actor?
As a singer and as an actor before I started training again.
Yeah.
I've only had maybe three acting classes in my entire life.
But it came naturally to you again?
From performing.
Yeah,
from performing.
Right.
Because I was always cast in, like, character parts, you know, mm-hmm. and I would always watch the other actors, and I'd go to see a lot of straight theater.
It's the same thing. You just immersed yourself in it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great.
So it's been great.
It's been great. So how did you, and I heard the story, so why don't you tell the story about contact, how you wound
how
up with it? Yeah, right.
I had retired. I mean, I had done a career of performing. I had done musicals.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I had done musicals. I had done, you know, a lot of things. I had done film. I had done everything. And I had actually kind of retired and was back in Pittsburgh. And I had, at the time, I had a dance theater company that I was a co-director of. So that was my life. I had this little dance company.
Wow.
I was teaching in the university. It was still a college, though. I was still teaching in the college. And that was my life. And I came to New York for, why did I come here? Oh, I came to see, actually, this is the irony of it all. I came to see a Susan Stroman show.
Ah.
And she had a show on Broadway called Steel Pier.
Mm-hmm.
So I came to New York to see that show. And while I was there, that same week, there was an audition for a tour of Dreamgirls, the musical Dreamgirls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the tour was to, slated to go tour and then come back to Broadway. So that was the thing. And I said, well, I'm going to go to the audition and see what they're asking for now to go back to take it to teach in school. You know,
of
to
course,
see
right,
what, you know,
right,
what they're
right.
doing.
Because so that you can prepare your students.
To see what, you know, the level of what of dancers that they need. So I went to the audition, I ended up getting the job. So I got the job, and then there was a dilemma, and this was in the mid-year. It wasn't like June, it was like November.
Yeah,
you know, like
right.
I was offered the job, so it was a halfway, you know, point. And I went back to the class, and I said, here's this scenario, and I totally will not take this, you know, if you guys say this. You know, I totally will not do, because I made a promise to you, and I know how hard, I'm getting emotional.
I'm tears in my eyes.
I know how hard this is
right.
for you to trust somebody.
Right.
You know what I mean? And your parents have spent all their money. I'm sorry.
Right, right.
Sorry.
No, no. I'm crying, too. It's,
so,
right.
I just said, I won't do this. You know?
Right.
And they were like, you're crazy. Go, you don't need to go. So, that was it. I wasn't worried about the administration. It had nothing. I said, please. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right, right. It's just
the kids. It's the kids.
Right.
You know, so I went in, I got
And this is, of course, what makes you such a good teacher. The level at which you care. And it must communicate itself, whether you, even if you don't talk, it must communicate itself to the kids and or to whoever you're teaching. And so they have to trust you.
Yeah, so this took me back there. So, so I went, I went, and luckily there was another director, like I said, a co-director of this dance company, because I was also dealing with all the dancers and actors in the job.
Right.
It was payroll, the whole thing, and they said, go, give it a try. And so I ended up on this tour, and it was supposed to come back into Broadway, and at the end of, like, during the tour is when Chicago had come back, so like older performers were back in vogue, you know, the musical Chicago.
Right.
So everyone was like, oh my God, Tomei's performing again. And like, well, come back to New York, you know, like, give it another shot. I said, you know, I have this life. And they were like, just give it a shot, you know. So at the end of the tour, I said, okay, I came back, I folded the company, I sold my house, and I moved back to New York.
Oh my God.
And this was in August of 1998. Okay, so I'm back there in September, August. And I got a show right as soon as I got there. It was an off-Broadway play. And
As a what?
As an actor, just as an actor dancer, and
right.
And I was also the dance captain, and like the assistant to the choreographer. So I was kind of like working my way, you know, back in. And two of the dancers in that production were invited to this private audition for Susan Stroman, and they were friends of mine. And so they, all we knew was that it was called Contact, and that it was going to happen on a Monday. This audition was going to happen on a Monday.
Right.
And it was invitation only. So, and I came over to meet them, and they said, why don't you call and see if you can go to this audition? I said, wait a minute. I said, they invited you. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't invited. That's like, it's a private thing. They said, well, all they could do is say no. You know, and I said, well, he's absolutely right. You know, so I just called, and they remembered, the casting agency remembered me, and they said, okay, let us see when you can come in, because it has to be guys and girls partnered up.
Right.
And I went, oh, okay, great. And so they said, why don't you come in at, like, I think I was 12 o'clock. And my friends were at 10, well, no, my friends were at 10 o'clock. Yeah, right. And so I was 12, and I think they were later, is what it was. And so I remember the day of, the night before the audition, the show I was in was closing. And so everybody wanted to go out for a drink. This is a funny story. Everyone wanted to go out for a drink. And so I said, okay. So I went out. We ended up coming back in. My audition's like 12 o'clock.
Right, right.
Back into my apartment at 6 a.m. on Monday morning. And I went, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. I have this audition. Like, and I've got to go, because if I don't go, they'll never call me
again.
That's
right,
that's right. My way in, you know.
Right.
So I went home, and this is where the military school training came.
Yes.
I said to myself, okay, how can I do this? Okay, great. So I just figured it out. So I showered, got dressed in my dance clothes, in my clothes, and went to bed like that. So I knew, like, once I got up, it was just go. You know what I mean? It was just like go. And so I did that. I slept. I got like 3 hours sleep. I got up and said, okay, go. And so I was dressed, got there, got to the audition at City Center, which is a very large studio. Mm-hmm. And already in the room were like 60-something dancers. So then I figured it out. Oh, she's seeing dancers from 10 to 12, 12 to 2, 2
right,
to
4, right, right,
6.
Right.
An all-day thing, you know. And I said, well, there's no way in hell I'm going to get the job now. Right. So I know because, you know, she has the creme de la creme of, you know, and I'm just nobody, you know. But I just want to make a first impression because I'd never seen her before. I knew who she was, but I'd never seen her before. So my group goes in, and when I go in, I knew one person in the room, like maybe 80 dancers.
Oh,
and the one person I said to him, I was very honest, his name is Rocker, and he ended up in the show too. Mm-hmm. I said, Rocker, I you know, I went out last night, I had a couple of drinks, I really am not all here, I can't really hear too well, please help me. And he said, absolutely, you know, he said, absolutely, I totally got it. But then it was just such a fun audition. It was so organized. That's the thing I remember about her auditions. They were so organized and so structured and so intimidating and so not stressful. You know, you just had a fun time, and she's such a happy person.
Mm-hmm.
That I went, oh, this is not as, you know, as bad as I thought. It was actually fun. And at the end of it,
did she have you do?
We did a little solo thing together.
Everybody,
you know, all together, but you weren't partnered. You know,
right.
It's just a combination, like
right.
Maybe 32 counts. And it was fun. It was really fun. It was very low to the ground, kind of dancing. It was just fun, and you'd have a great time. But then she partnered you up with the woman, and it was just like luck of the draw. She was just calling names to go, when she wasn't looking at types or anything.
Right.
And I just happened to end up with a very, very tall woman. And from what I think back now, I think she was more of a model that moved than a dancer. I think she was a model, you
mm-hmm.
know? But she wanted someone, tall women for the girl in yellow. You know?
So right.
And I ended up with her. And I remember there was a great deal of difficulty in hand grips, and you know, because there's all this partnering going on. And we were arguing, I remember, about that. Like
you and the woman.
And the woman. We're about hands.
Where the hands went.
Meanwhile, steps are flying by. You know?
Right.
And I was like this, and I went, hands?
But
don't worry about the hands.
I
said, oh my God. And so I just realized it's not going to happen. You know, it's just not going to work out. You know,
right.
It's just not going to work out. And so that was, I said, so I didn't give up on the audition. I just said, it's just not going to
be. Right,
just
you just did
relax.
Your thing.
Just
and
relax. And at the end of the audition, she went by and she thanked everyone personally. She looked you in the eye, she shook your hand and said your name again. And then she came to me, she said, pronounce your name again. I said, Tomei. She said, Tomei. Okay, good. That was it. And she just had this question mark on her head, and that was it. And that was on a Monday. And then that Friday, that evening, I came home, and there was a message on my machine from the casting people, and they said that we would give us a call about Susan Stroman's contact. And that's all they said. And I went, well, it's impossible that, there has to be a callback. You know, it's just about a callback or something. And so I called them back, and I said, it was a Friday evening, you know, my nerves are like this. I'm like, what? And nothing. Friday, and then Sunday, another message got home. Very casual. Oh, this is Tara Rubin and calling from Johnson Lift. And it's nothing really stressful. No, not to be worried, but it's just Susan Stroman really liked you in the audition, and she wants to know, do you want to do the workshop? And I literally had the phone like this. It was just impossible because when you audition for a show in New York, there easily can be 5 or 6 callbacks.
Yeah, right.
There was no callback, you know, and I went, that's impossible.
You mean she chose everybody that day?
She chose everybody. And it was like, but we didn't know that. See?
Right,
like,
right,
you know, and it was like, well, that's impossible. It's impossible. You know, so I called her back. She said, no, Tomei, she really liked you, and she just wants to know you. I said, well, of course I want to do it. You know, like,
right.
So that was November of 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we started rehearsals of the workshop in January of 1999. And the first day, so no one really knew who was cast. And we all showed up. There were like 16 of us. And some of us knew each other. Like, maybe I knew.
Did your friends make it?
My friends never showed up for the audition. They never showed up. They didn't even show up.
Why? Do you know?
That's the discipline now. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like
I got it. Later,
as it just kept going, like maybe like a year and a half later, I started to get like, oh, you know, Tomei, you're really disciplined. You know what I mean? Like
that's right.
I started
you
to
got
get,
it.
You know, like,
right.
you, like it was like it was
right.
ordinary to me. You know,
yes,
it was like
right. You knew how to do it. It was another natural thing.
It was just
right.
a natural thing. Exactly.
That's great.
It just went, wow. You know, like wow. Like I would never not think of not going.
Right.
You know, I would never not think of that. So I got the job, and we're in, and so the cast did the workshops, which was the third story of Contact, was done first. So that was 6 weeks. And we kind of all met, and there's some script, and we just kind of played around, and she played around with characters and different partners, and it all just kind of came together. And then the story, you know, the story kept gelling. We had great input. Everyone had great input on what you did and how the characters related and how the stories happened and little props. And it just became a really special thing. So when Lincoln Center saw that part of it, they loved it, you know, but we didn't know anything. So the workshop ended, and then that was February, March, April. So everybody went to audition, you know, back to audition.
Right, to life.
Work. Exactly. And another guy that was in the show, Peter, and I ended up at an audition together for the musical Ragtime.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the audition, and Stroman's assistant, Tara, was also on that creative staff. So when we walked into the audition, she said, "Why are you guys here?" And we were like, "Because we need a job."
Work,
you know?
Right?
And she said, "But do you have a job?" Like this. Well, we both panicked because we were like, "I didn't get a call." You know, you didn't get a call. And that very day, we got home, and there were like calls. You know, like, "Would you guys like to come back for the second workshop?" And we were like, "Oh my God, this is like going to happen." So I said yes. So that was, say, like on a Tuesday. The very next day, they called back and said, "Oh, so if you're going to come back and do the workshop in June, then they want to offer you the off-Broadway contract of the whole thing because it's going to go into full rehearsal in August." And my whole life, I can't take it. My life just changed.
I know. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Like, oh, my God.
And
like,
I have tears again.
Oh, my God. You know? So it was great. So, you know, and it was a really great thing. So we came back. We did the two-week workshops, went into rehearsal, and then the show opened off-Broadway. They put the second story, "Did You Move?" together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the first Swinging put together. And then we opened, started August, and then September. We started doing performances, and it was sold out because it was in a really small theater, Mitzi knows, it's very small, only maybe 200 seats, and you're very in it. I mean, the audience is right there.
Right.
And so it was a huge hit, and we knew people loved it. We knew they were standing it, but we didn't realize how big the word of mouth was because we were always there. But then all these stars started dropping by, a point of coming to our dressing rooms and meeting everybody, and we were like, okay, fine. And, you know, it was really great.
Yeah.
And then it came to opening night in October, and at the same time, Susan Stroman was married to Mike Ockrent. He mm-hmm. was a famous director, and I had never met him, and he was sick, and he had leukemia.
Oh.
And so she was going through this huge success, and his health was at the same time, so she really clung to the cast. I mean, the cast,
yeah,
they was,
right,
you know,
family.
Family. And then the piece is hers. It's like Contact is one of the only pieces that she actually owns. It's like she created it. He pushed her to do it. It's really personal to her. Like, and everyone that was there at the time. And that's all I can really say. It's just, it's a different kind of show. That's
right.
What's kept me with it. It's a different kind of show.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and then it, in some ways, it became your life.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, really, the people that were in that company, we were together so long, it's so intimate, and how things, we're like a family. We
right.
really are very, very tight. And so the show opened, and it opened, I think, in November. October, early November. Oh, no, October, because it was supposed to close on the weekend of Thanksgiving. And so we opened, and huge success at
yeah.
the Times, and yeah. And the very next day, we came back in, and Lincoln Center just sat us all down. We just thought it was going to be like, thank you, yeah. And no, they're fantastic there. They had a meeting with us. They tripled our salaries. They told us that the show was going to be extended until New Year's.
Oh my
God. They were going to pay us. And then they were in a situation where they had a show that was going to go upstairs on the Broadway house.
Right.
And they had to wait to see if that was going to be a hit or not. And if it was, they would move Contact to another Broadway house. If it wasn't, we would go upstairs. We were like, oh, my God. And then they said that because that's not, either way, it was going to be
It's going to be there.
It's going to be there. It's going to, January and February, we're going to go off. So we're going to pay you retainers, you know, to stay together. So we're going to pay you. So go on vacation.
Right, go have a good time.
Go have a good time until when you come back, it's going to be, we're going to own you for a while. You know,
right.
We were like this. This was all the next day. And Stroman was stunned to himself because it never happened. Ever, 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 ever happens like that. It just was like, then they had us, so we went and did that. Then they had classes on how to conduct interviews and how to explain the show, if it's a musical or not, and how to do that. I mean, so we all were like educated.
For the PR.
So we were educated in a way how to represent ourselves. And it was a really respectful time. And that opening night, she sat us down, like right before the curtain. And we all were like, why did you
How
do
many
this
of
now?
You were there?
By then, it was like 19 of us.
Okay.
And it's a boy, Gaines, and Karen Ziemba, but you know, so
right.
everyone's kind of there. And she sat us down. She said, well, I guess you all are kind of like, I'm going to do it again. Wondering how you got here, because none of us could figure it out. Like, there was no callback. She said, you know, I just knew what I wanted. I knew the type of performance I wanted to do. And so I didn't want to do a callback, because you all had paid your dues, and so I went and made some phone calls.
Oh, my
she
God.
She said, I just called, like, everybody that you worked with before that I knew or made the tag to, and I said, does this person show up on time at rehearsal? Does this person, are they polite? Do they conduct themselves? You know, do they take class? Do they, and if they fit right, it's going to work. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and that's what she said. So bravo to you for making it through your lives.
Right.
We were like, oh, no, everybody was just bawling.
Yes.
And she said, I know I hated to do it on the opening night, but you had to know. And we were like,
I just want to say, because I'm going to air this, that both of us are crying.
Okay. But that was, how respectful she was of everybody. So
yeah.
She said, so this is your piece, you, and that's what the review said. If you read the original review, hidden in there is this little thing about these performers, like they just take it, and everyone just went, for the first time we felt validated, like all those classes that you ever took, and
all
that work, you just felt so validated, and that's what I keep telling
to whoever you tell,
this piece is not designed for like the star and, it was like everybody,
it's the true sense of ensemble. Right.
Everybody thinks of themselves as a principal, and everybody just kind of meets like that. So you have to be responsible for who you are and think it's your story, but this other stuff is happening while you're there. And that's so an audience person can watch this person tonight, and they want to come back and see it again, and they'll watch this one, and they follow it like that. It's not just like the wife and the husband or the girl in yellow dress and people. It's everybody all over it. So it makes it very exciting for the performers, stay involved and want to give more. And, so it's a very open piece and a very educational thing. Like, you can learn to be a better actor in the piece. You can learn to be a better dancer in the piece, or a better performer. Or it has that.
Right, better collaborator.
A better collaborator. It has all of that stuff built in the piece. And that's why I think it's exciting, to work on it every single time, because it's different every single time.
Right.
It's a new group of people who are kind of like, oh, and like, I love it that the ballet dancers are being like, oh, like, okay. And there's a moment where it just kind of like clicks, like, I can do this, I can get it, I get it, okay, so I love that part of it more.
Yeah,
than,
but you love that everywhere.
Yeah, I do.
That's right. You love that wherever you, whatever you're doing, you want that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's it. It's a lot. I mean, it's a big journey. And then for her to entrust it, like to entrust the piece, and I emailed the original cast, and they want to know, everything. I send them pictures all the time, and they just go like, wow, it's just really a lot. It's a lot of stuff in there, that deals with the piece, because everyone invested so much.
Yes.
And it's really rare that you get to work with someone like her, because she cares so much. I mean, she will do anything for you if you're working. If you're really working and you're on board, she'll go way out of her way to make you happy.
Because she honors it, she respects it, none of these words really is what I want to say. So I'm not going to try any more. My God. Okay, so since then, just a capsule of what's happened since then.
Since the show?
Yeah.
Well, it opened and closed, and it had two national tours, a union and a non-union tour, and then a London company, and then a Japanese company. And
did you do them all?
No, I didn't do any of them.
You didn't do any of them, right.
I was still doing the Broadway show.
Oh, right.
And then once we closed, the non-union tour was still going for a while. And then where I went to school, Point Park University, wanted to do a musical.
Right.
And so they contacted me and said, would you want to do a musical? And I said, sure. So I went there to meet with them about a completely different show.
Right.
And while I was there, they informed me that another university was doing that show. So they didn't have one. So they just out of the blue said, well, what about content? And I went, you're crazy. And I mean, I was like, it never would have entered my mind for someone to try and do the show. It just wasn't. I went, oh, well. I mean, on paper it makes sense because you've got a big dance department, a big theater department, it just makes sense. But I don't know if it's possible because I wasn't a swing, I wasn't an understudy, I don't have any notes, anything like that. And so I said, well, let me call them, John Wideman and Strong, and see if it's possible. And they called and they both said, well, it's not impossible, if you can figure out how to do it and make it work, sure, So I got Leanna Smith, who was a swing on the Broadway company as well on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, would you want to come with me? And she said, sure, I'd love to do it. So we go in, and we had 6 weeks at Point Park of, they wanted the show, but they also wanted it to be about the process, about how kids learn and audition and work with artists. And so it was about that. So I brought in three of the original cast members who were actually living in Pittsburgh at the time, two of them, and they came in, and then one came in from New York. So we all kind of worked with them and developed things, and we overcast it. Like, it only has like 19 parts, I think. But there were like 500 kids that auditioned, And I wanted to say, well, is there a way to, cast as many as we can or keep them over a 7-day period of auditions? Just keep them in here, like make it like a big master class and then eliminate as we have to, We try and hold on to them as long as we can. So we got down to it, and then ultimately there were like about 50 kids left. And I went, well, you know, like, I can't cut these kids. I can't, because they were, and I said, you know what? I said, it's going to sound really crazy, but because I was in dance companies, I know how to make this work. And they're like, well, what are you talking about? I said, so let's take each of the three stories and make them their own company. You know, so only one group of kids.
Yeah, I got it.
One do contact.
Right.
Like, so no kid has to learn all three pieces. And then inside
and you
those,
can use them all.
I can use more. And then inside that, let's triple cast them. You know, and then have understudies and swings and teach them what a swing is, because
right.
no one had ever taught them what a Broadway swing and how to do that. So I cast this huge thing, and I said, "We'll work it like it's a nutcracker." You know, like this, this cast,
yeah,
and you know,
yeah.
we'll figure it out. And they were like, "Oh my God, like you're gonna figure this out!" And the school was like, "Oh man, this is fantastic." So all of them got the pool. We made sure every kid got to perform at least two times to learn the show. And the original cast was emailing people again, like, "You can do this, and here's a little secret." And, you know, so it became this big thing.
Oh, it's great.
You know, Sherman was so impressed with that. You know, she said, "Oh, told me that's really beautiful." And so right when we were doing that, that was supposed to be it. It wasn't, you know, just...
Yeah,
that,
every one of these things was supposed to be it.
But really, this was
right.
no, like...
Right.
thing. And while we were doing that, another company in Norfolk, Virginia said we'd like to do it. And it was 2 weeks after this one was going to close. So, you know, even the show was open, I was gone.
Right, you were done.
And then 2 weeks, you know, after this was maybe like 3 weeks later, they said they wanted to do it. And I said, well, okay, but, you know, how many weeks do you have? You only have 2 weeks to put it up. I said, well, we had 6 weeks here. And I said, 2 weeks is crazy. It's
yeah.
crazy. And Stroman said, well, how can you do this? I said, well, let me make some phone calls. So I called people from the Broadway company, from the London company, from the national tour, from the non-union tour. Can you come in and do this company? And they were like, okay, fine. So we kind of pulled like the nucleus together of that, and there were sure like a missing couple, maybe like five, four. And so we auditioned and had people there, and then I was able to pull two dancers from the, there were two tracks missing, two dancers from the college production. They came, finished the show on Sunday, and they came the week next week. The school let them out, they came down, and they got their professional cards, and
oh,
they got to work
lovely.
With, you know, and so they went on, and then it just kind of kept going.
Right.
And one of those students from Point Park is here. He's done four productions. He's done every production we've done in the United States. Sean, you and the guy on the swing.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing that he learned it in Pittsburgh and then did the...
As a student.
Oh. And then did the Norfolk Virginia. Then last summer he did the Boston company, and now he's here. And he's just kind of grown up into this man. And at the same time, I went back to grad school. So I'm in grad school while all this is going on.
You? Mm-hmm. Studying?
It's called, my degree is in New Media Art and Performance. So it's taking dance and performance, all the arts, and mixing them through media, film. And so one of the projects I had to do in school was make a film documentary of the process
of course.
Park, you know, the whole thing. And so I made a film of the kids learning stuff. And Sean's in there learning how to do the swing from the guy Danny, who was one of the swings on Broadway.
Uh-huh.
You know? So we have Sean doing it, and then we have him in Norfolk the very, like a couple weeks later, just up there, you know, just doing it, you know. And just, it's a really beautiful thing, because he's like falling off the swing here, and then he's
yeah,
just like
yeah,
on it.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know.
And it
like,
makes the point, doesn't it, that,
yeah.
that you're trying to make with
exactly.
your right on screen.
Exactly.
It's
so then he's here, and now he's here.
Wow.
You know? So now it's at the point where he doesn't even have to, like, all he needs to know is they can learn, he and Ariel, because the girl on the swing, they've done it together. This will be the third time they've done it together. All they need is one day to get on the swing, go, oh,
get used to
okay,
it, get it back.
It swings on an 8
right.
count as opposed to a 12. And,
right.
and okay.
okay.
And then they're ready to go. It's amazing, you know. So I'm really happy and proud of him that he did that. He's trusted me, and his family's kind of trusted me to kind of mold him in the right thing. It's really nice.
Who wouldn't trust you? Your heart is...
Yeah.
On your sleeve doesn't even cut it. I mean, your heart's on your face, you know. Oh, my God. Wow, you are such a gift. It's
yeah.
astonishing that
yeah.
you didn't know this until you knew it,
no,
you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
it developed like lately. I mean, late. You
well,
know,
but it must always have been there. I don't mean, you know, your interest in or, you know, the dance thing. It's your heart.
Mm.
That always had to have been there.
I think so. I just wasn't aware of, you know, I mean, then it was a balance of, like, I became conscious of it, like, oh, I'm unusual. I'm not unusual. I'm just different. You know, I'm different. Not everybody's like that. You know, like,
no, dear,
like that,
not
you know?
Everybody's
you know,
like that.
But see, I didn't get that. I really didn't get that. I was brought up in that you should just respect everybody, you know, and I think that comes from my parents being in the 60s and going through so much, but I never, ever heard a negative thing. It was always like, of course you can do this. You know, of course you can do that, you know. And so that's why I kind of get, like, the Obama thing. Like, because I'm his agent. I get it. I mean, I so get who he is. I get it, you know. And so I just always...
And also, mm-hmm. you give it.
And with that said, I think it's important is to
that's
pass
right.
it on.
That's
I don't
right.
own anything. I mean, my talent is not meant to hold on to. It's like... to give it away, you know, it's like meant to pass it on. And I think that's part of theater tradition. You know, I think a lot of artists don't understand that, you know, unfortunately. You know,
no.
And we have a culture now that deals with reality shows, you know, which it kind of shortens it off for me, where we're not saying that they're talented, but that anyone can be a star. And it's not true. Not anyone can be a, you know, be out there.
And anybody can be a celebrity.
Exactly. That's what it is. But then there are certain people who are, it's their birthright. I mean, they're born to do this. And if you're born to do this, you seek out the training and you seek out the, so I think it really slices that. If your heart is saying, I'm going to go take class, I'm going to train, and then there's someone who just kind of shows up, you know, from anywhere, you know, oh, I can do this. You know, it's a different thing, and I really feel that that's not quite fair, you know, in a way.
Well, I agree with you, but I think that the people who have to do it and worked at it, that's a very, very different pleasure than the, oh, I lucked out, I can, and that other thing doesn't last.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, it comes and it goes, and when it's over, you've got nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But nobody can take away from you what you have.
Yeah, I feel that way.
You know?
And it's been only recently that I've got that. I mean, really, things, you know, because I just kind of work. And I have a very unusual side stuff, you know, as well as the contact thing. I worked for 9 years. I was a character on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And so we would have these conversations, like off camera, just about anything. He would ask my opinion about stuff.
Right.
And then years later, I got like, oh, I guess that is kind of unusual that I worked with him. You know what I mean? Because he was just such a normal person, you know. And I go, oh, yeah, there's these weird things. So what was it that these very diverse types saw in me that they all would work? Because you would never have a conversation between, like say, Mr. Rogers and Bill T. Jones. It's like, they just don't, you know, they just don't fit, you know. But I think it's just a common, like, energy, I think, that they all had, that they saw or thinking or something.
Yeah, no, they saw the... They were simpatico. They saw the similar thing in you that was in them.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that said, I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
What the radio show is about is becoming who you really are. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I interview artists is because in order to be an artist in our culture, you have to be, it has to be who you really are.
Yeah.
And once you've found that in yourself, you can't help but nurture it, honor it,
mm-hmm.
be it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you, my God, you are living, breathing proof of it. It's wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you. I have this philosophy that I try and teach, but that it takes great courage to enjoy something. You know, because in our culture, it's just the name. But if you really can stand up and say, I like that, and I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I like being this.
I like who I am.
I like who I am. I don't care. This is who I like, you know?
Right.
And so what? You don't like it.
You don't like it?
You don't like it.
Right.
That's okay.
That's what I mean?
You know, you like what you like.
Right.
You know, you like what you like. But I think that, you know, to have that courage to say, you know, I may be peculiar, but I'm good at it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. And it feels good. And you know... That's why I interview people like you, because I want other people to hear that, that you don't have to be like everybody else, and whatever it is that turns you on, or whatever it is that is your passion, that's fine.
Right.
Exactly. Enjoy it.
Exactly.
Love it.
Exactly. Exactly.
This is a great place to stop. Thank you
so much,
Tomek.
Absolutely.
God.
Thank you.
Okay, and so there you have Tomek Cousins, and... as I am saying at the end of that interview, he and people like him, and actually I said this last week after my interview with Carol, are the reason that I interview artists, because you can hear, as you could hear in Carol's interview, and so screamingly apparent in Tomei's, the passion, the love, the attachment, the commitment to being who he is, demonstrating with what he does, how he feels, what he thinks, what he says, that congruent thing, right? That how he feels and what he does and what he says, that's all of a piece. And it comes out of this passionate knowing that this is who he is. And I'm hoping, as I said to him, that this is the reason that I interview people like this, so that you can hear what it sounds like when you really are who you are. There's the energy to be that thing. And, I mean, it's just pouring out of him. And because I know, and I've been talking over the last few weeks and months, actually, about the cover story, the fact that we learn either from what our parents told us we were or what we had to be or circumstances that occur in our early life, we learn to hide pieces of ourselves, to pretend that we are other than we really are, to present what I've been calling our cover story. And you hear in Tomei when he says, my parents told me that whatever I was, that was fine. You know, just to do whatever I, to be me. And when he says he wants to take another dance class, they don't say, well, why would you want to do that? They say, okay, fine. And they deal with what was a learning disability by expanding his horizons, by bringing in music and movement, and that lights a flame, even though that flame waited until he was about 17 to turn a light bulb on. And you know, when he was telling me that, he was literally putting his hand above his head, showing me the light bulb going on, right? And that said, yes, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is what I need. And of course, once he made that connection, it was all go from there. And so, of course, I'm hoping that while you're listening to these people and listening to me talk about the kinds of things that get between us and who we really are, that you're asking yourself, is what I'm presenting, is what I'm thinking about myself really all there is? Or have I had to hide underground, hide undercover parts of myself that maybe I can recapture so I can have that too, that flame, that energy, that passion, that happiness of being congruent inside myself. Because trying to hide pieces of yourself, it takes energy, among other things. So, okay, I'm running out of time, as I quite often do. But I do want to say, before I close the show, remember, if you live in or around Sarasota, Florida, you want to come and see Contact at the Oslo Repertory Theater. Opened last week. It's terrific. You will see the result of Tomei's work. And so come on down, get tickets, go. also, I can't close the show without thanking Josh Hackney, who makes this show as good as it can possibly be. Fixes everything I do wrong, reminds me what I have forgotten, shows up. So again, if you have IT, computer, recording, electronic questions, and you want the man, you want Josh, go up on my website, thelinshow.com, and say, I want Josh, and I'll get him for you. So as always, I hope that you heard something in this show that you can use, something that you didn't know, something that you knew but had forgotten, something that triggered your interest or piqued your curiosity or made you laugh, something that makes you want to come back, because I will be here again next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go. From the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into the